living in the now, or out of it. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing, University of Philosophy, here in Campo, California, bringing you Absolute Philosopher. Living in the now, or out of it. Are we eager to live in the now or out of it? Are we eager to live in the present moment, in this exciting activity that life has for us right here and right now? Or do we want to step out of it and go off into a land that we are unsure of, into a awareness that we are unaware of? Where do we want to go? What is our choice? We often hear about saints and beautiful people who are off on meditative journeys and doing beautiful things, and we delight in that activity. We delight in seeing them in this deep meditation, and we delight in sometimes seeing them perform what appears to be miracles in those deep meditations or in that meditative state. We look at people who have come before us, great spiritual leaders, who have gone into introspection, have gone into intuitive modes of consciousness. And as they've gone into these intuitive modes of consciousness, they seem to have touched a depth, an awareness that we have never yet touched. And we think to ourselves, hey, that sounds pretty fascinating. And then we think to ourselves, okay, now we have the choice of two roads that we can take. Yes, just two roads. We have the choice of two roads that we can travel while living on this dimension. One road is in an otherness, and another road is in a nowness. Living in an otherness, we go into deep meditative understanding of ourself. We go like the Buddha, listening to that inner self, to the bliss that transcends all experiences, all awareness, all beingness. And of course, that's the next step to stepping out of the awareness of this existence. Or we have the opportunity of being fully, totally, joyously, wonderfully aware of this present consciousness that we're living in, and live in the now. We find it so beautiful that people can go into meditative states and be like monks, or be like gurus, or be like great teachers, or great spiritual leaders, and live in a spiritual illuminated state of consciousness. But stop and think what these people are really doing. What are these people really doing in their illuminated state of consciousness? We might take the point of Jesus the Christ. Now, Jesus was very interested in life, in the world. He was very interested in what's going on around him. He was very interested in being one as the world with him, and being in the world but not of it, but enjoying it thoroughly. He did not teach to transcend that boundary and move into another dimension, a dimension might be called death, or a dimension that might be called eternal life, where you're living totally unaware of any of the dimensions you're going through, or to live in those dimensions. Well, now, let's just look at the teachings of the Master Teacher himself. What did he do? Well, he said the divine is within. He didn't say that we should disappear in ourselves and listen to that divine and not relate it to the world. He said, it is done unto you according to your belief. And he said, we should go within and listen to the Father within, listen to the divine within ourselves. And as we listen to the divine within ourselves, he didn't say listen to the divine within ourselves to the exclusion of the exterior world. He said listen to the divine within yourself relative to how you live in the world that you live in. Be in the world, but not of it. Be in the world of your divinity, not the world that appears to be around you. Now, the world that appears to be around us is a world of humanity, is a world of the relative. And it is not a bad world. It is a world that has many opportunities to be more beautiful, many opportunities to live from a deeper awareness of what it is. But it is beautiful in itself, and there is no reason any of us should commit suicide and run away from this world or go into deep meditation and leave this world behind. We go into meditation, we go into introspection, so we can be better beings of who we are, so we can see the truth of who we are, and so we can learn the principle of the law of cause and effect. We learn how to use these beautiful stem cells that are throughout our body, waiting to do whatever we ask them to do. We can learn to live a life of joy and comfort and harmony and peace, to live a life of fulfillment, not live a life of exclusion of the physical world to the inclusion only of the spiritual world or a mental world. There is no mental world and spiritual world and physical world. There is just one world. There is no exclusion of the outer for the inner. There is only the allness. Whenever we get so excited upon disappearing from this earth, when we listen to people who are expressing this as the Buddha had done and as many others do, we sometimes get tantalized by the idea that, oh, wouldn't it be great to live in that illumined consciousness? Well, my friends, every moment of your life and my life, we live in an illumined state of consciousness. We sometimes say what this illumined state of consciousness is by the physical appearances of the world around us, and when we do that, we limit ourselves. But when we say that our allness, this physical world around us and this spiritual world within us and the worlds in which we know ourselves to be, are all good and very good, then we begin seeing that good in them. And the good is not the matter of judgment or choice of that respect, but the good is a matter of what is beneficial to us, what is harmonious. It is not harmonious to hurt ourselves. It is not harmonious to be in pain. It's not harmonious to be unhappy. It's not harmonious to be in any limitation of any kind. That's not harmonious. That's not harmonious for a Buddha, or for a Jesus, for you, or for me. The only harmonious thing is to live in absolute allness, abundance, in the isness. And that isness includes our relative world here that we've created. Now, give yourself a game, like the game of chess, and say, okay, you may play the game of chess, and as you play the game of chess, you may be a winner or a loser. You may be fantastic, you may be a great champion, or you may be just a good player who enjoys the game and delights in the game and finds the game an amusing experience and an enjoyable experience, whether you win it or lose it. The game has been challenging to your thought process and you just thoroughly enjoyed it. Now, that is the way we might look at life. Our life is a chess game. And it's not a matter whether we win it or lose it. It's not a matter whether we play it supremely well or just modestly well. It's just a matter of that we play it enjoyably well. That every moment of the chess game is a happy challenge. Not a challenge that, oh my God, he's going to kill me. He's going to take my king, my rook, my... No, no, no. Hey, he is moving in on the rules of the game, playing it to accomplish the goal that he wants. And I am doing the same thing. And we are, so to speak, contrary to one another, but we're not. We're both playing the same game with the same rules, and whoever uses these rules most expeditiously, most beautifully and harmoniously, wins that game. But in winning the game, you haven't accomplished any great, wonderful, magical thing. You just won the game. And you keep winning the game as you go along. Life is a series of chess games, you might say. Life is a series of games in which we win or lose, and the winning is no great deal, and the losing is no great deal. All each are a joy, and each is a joy as you do it, and after you have done it, you think back about it, and you say, that was a good game. Now, I could have made these different moves here. Now, next time I play it, I would remember that. But the next time you play it, a whole new set of attitudes are in place, and so the things you try to play it with by what you played it with before don't fit. And so you play a whole new game of chess. Our life is a whole new game of life. Oh, we live in dimension upon dimension upon dimension of life, and we are only aware of one dimension at a time, because this is one chess game at a time. And as we are playing this game, are we playing it by the rules? Are we playing it as competently as we can? Are we playing it as lovingly and joyously and happily and harmoniously as we can? Or are we frustrated? Are we flustered? Are we confused? Are we looking at the game and trying to put rules on it that don't belong? Now, the rules of the game are exceedingly simple, and they're the same rules for every dimension game that we play. Every game we play in our human experience is played by the same rules, and everyone knows the rules, whether it is an infant child just born, or whether it's an aged wise sage, whoever it may be, they all play by the same rules. Now, what are the rules that we play the game of life by? Are we living in the now or out of it? Well, when we live in the now, we play the game of life by the rules basically called the law of cause and effect. Whatever cause we put in motion, we get an effect equal and opposite to it. Now, what cause do you want to put in motion? I put it in motion a cause I am happy. Now I get a result that I am unhappy because it's opposite to it. Well, that can't be right. That can't be right. That can't be right if I put a cause in motion to be happy and I get an opposite cause to be unhappy because the law of cause and effect gives us an equal and opposite. No, no, no. That's a misunderstanding of the law of cause and effect. The law of cause and effect means for every cause I put in motion, I get an equal cause to it. I get a cause equal to the cause I put in motion, not opposite to it. If I put happiness in motion, I get happiness. If I put sadness in motion, I get sadness. And it's no more difficult than that. Now, if I think about illness, I enjoy illness. If I think about unhappiness, I enjoy unhappiness. If I think about poverty, I enjoy poverty. What a silly thing to ever think about. If I know, and I do, if everyone knows, and each does, that the law of cause and effect is the only guiding factor of this universe, then why is it every one of us do not use it beneficially every moment of our life? Well, sometimes people put causes in motion and they say that they want to watch horror movies. And in watching horror movies, they see these movies. Now, the first time you see it, you say, oh, revulsion, revulsion. You don't want anything to do with it. The second time you see movies, horror movies, you say, oh, that's interesting. Yeah, that's... And third time, each time you you accept them more and more. And as you accept them, they become part of your acceptable, beneficial thinking. Not really beneficial, but you think they are. You empower them by your attention to them. Whatever we give our attention to, we empower. And that might be a very interesting statement for us to put on our foreheads. Whatever we give attention to, we empower. Whatever we give attention to, we empower. Whatever we give attention to, we empower. If I give attention to being a happy person, I empower that. If I give attention to being a wealthy person, I empower that. If I give attention to being a happy person, I empower that. If I give attention to being a fulfilled person, a remarkable person, a fabulous person, I empower that. Sounds good, doesn't it? Yes, it sounds good. Now, where is the rub? Where is the problem? Where is the condition that makes it appear not to be so when it's supposed to be a principle? Well, what makes it not to be so is that little attitude in us that says, I wish. The little attitude, I want to be. It is not so now. I'd like it to be. The little attitude that says, I'm not good enough to have that experience. The little attitude that says all of these silly things. Now, why would we allow that little attitude to be in our consciousness if that is not our choice, if that is not what we want to have? Why would we let a little attitude like that upset our apple cart and take away from us all of the beauty and the goodness and the wonder that we have? Very interesting, isn't it? Why is it that Christianity is such a powerful focus of attention of world religions? Why is it when you look up world religions, you see which are the greatest, the largest, and the most? And that's interesting. Oh, we will not say which one is right. There is no right or wrong. We only say which one brings the more happy circumstances. Which one brings the more fulfilling circumstances? Now, the United States of America was founded on the Christian religion. True, it was kind of a tough Christian religion that they lived in those days, but it nonetheless had principle as its primary goal. And so long as it lived by that principle, it was a growing and a great nation. All the nations of Europe, all the nations of the world, preceded the United States, preceded the American culture and the American growth and economics and politics and everything else. They all preceded them by not hundreds of years, but by thousands of years. And as they did this, they went through many struggles and they went through many conditions that were very destructive to them. And in the United States, living by these principles, great and wonderful things happened to the nation. And then, when the nation started to think separately from that, then it began to have many problems. When it began to think that some people were better than other people, then it started to have problems. When it started to think of how it would judge other people and how some people were not worthy of going to school, then it started to have problems. But a rebellion took place to have those rights be admired and adhered to, and they were. And though the trail to happiness and the trail to fulfillment might be ups and downs, it's more up now, always has been, than it has been downs. When we have a principle that we live by, when we have goals that we live by, that we believe in, then it makes us great. But when we take our goals and we dissipate them by taking away their power, taking away our belief in them, then we take away the belief in ourselves. We know from within ourselves, we know from our introspective self, who and what we are. This every being on the face of the earth has within them. They have the opportunity to believe in themselves. Now, as other nations believed in themselves, great things happened. Some nations were even quite small, and they did not want to engage in war. They did not want to engage in unhappiness, and they did not. And because they did not, they continued along in a peaceful way. Throughout the world, we have the opportunity to see many illustrations of the principle being lived by nations, by people individually, by cultures, by religions, by all sorts of things. And as we saw this being lived, great things happened. Now, we may unwisely chop down the trees of our world and mess up our world culture of breathing, the CO2 and the other things that are trees are a major portion in balancing. And we may mess up many, many things. And as we do this, we think to ourselves, goodness, we're going to destroy everything. And yet, we have seen enough evidence of whenever things were allowed to go back to a natural balance, it was not many years before they went back to a natural balance and went back to being whatever was the highest and best of itself. We look at calamities that happen on the face of the earth, like avalanches or earthquakes or hurricanes and floods, and we think how terrible they are. We think how utterly destructive they are. And yet, it takes only the consciousness of man to think in a positive way to have all those things be in balance. Wherever people are in balance, we cannot placate the gods by offering human sacrifices. That's a very silly thing that has been tried often throughout cultures and throughout religious lives. But what we can do is to use our mind, the most powerful force in the universe. And by using our mind, we put a cause in motion for our universe. There now is peace on earth. There now is ecological balance on earth. There now is harmony on earth in all areas. Disease comes from imbalance. Poverty comes from imbalance. All these things come from just a lack of balance in our own consciousness and our own thinking. If we were to take our thoughtfulness and put it on, now there is peace on earth, and it began with me, there is perfect health throughout the universe. Health is our natural proclivity, our natural balance. Saying these things, believing these things, knowing these things, soon hospitals would no longer be needed. Doctors would no longer be needed. Medicines would no longer be needed. Soon, there would be no need for money. There would be no need for anything at all, because people would be living in such harmony, in such balance. They'd be living in such sharing. That would be a natural sharing. A storekeeper has a store so he can earn money. But he really has a store because he wants to share the goods of the world. And so people come in and buy the goods of the world from him. And they could do that with their mental power. They could do that with their thought power in a very positive, beautiful world if they would live in the now. If they would live in the realization that all is now and all is good and very good. Do we want to be out of it? Do we want to move on into the level that the Buddha had moved, into the level of a bliss? Do we want to go into that level of bliss where we are unaware of what's going on in the world? Or do we want to be like the Buddha, who was that illustration to us? He went into his introspective state and entered into nirvana, the state of bliss for him, but he chose to live among humanity and demonstrate that he, by the thought that he thinks, by the ideas in his mind, could live a fulfilling, rewarding life. And he didn't have to go out and work for a living. He didn't have to go out and strain. He just lived by his mind alone. And this same was true of the Master Jesus. He lived by his thought alone. Oh, things challenge different people. Things challenge Buddhas. Things challenge the Jesuses of the world. But the challenges are merely for us to put the cause in motion for happiness and peace and honor and joy. There will be people who say we should not do that, that we should have conflicts and wars, because that's the exciting part of life. Well, if that's the road we want to go, we can go that road, and we are joined by many others. But if we want to go the road of inner bliss, living in the now, in that inner bliss, living right now, doing everything in this human level from that inner bliss, that can be done and is done. And there are millions, billions of people on the face of the earth living in that consciousness. They are unaware that they're living in that consciousness. They're just living in it. And we are unaware that they are living in it, and we call them living in poverty oftentimes. We call them living in limitation. And yet, they are the happiest people in the universe. Because theirs is not a challenge in competition with the world. There's just a delight in being themselves and having fun, in living their lives in the most beneficial and the most beautiful manner that anyone could ever live it. We can make our choice today. We can make our decision now as to whether we want to be in the world or of the world. We want to be in the world but not of the world, or of the world and in the world together. Living in the now is a beautiful reflection of being just that. For living in the now, we are living in a constant state of bliss, a constant state of happiness and harmony and peace. We're living in a state of oneness, that all is great and beautiful and good, and all is who we are. Are you ready to live in such a state? I know I am. Are you ready to be one of those billions of people on the face of the earth who live in a state of bliss while being delightful, charming, fulfilling, wonderful, sensitive, caring human beings? Well, I am. And I invite you to join me in this blissful life of living in the now. Truly, that's what living in the now is all about. Have a wonderful day and live it in the now, the only way. I love you. I love you. I love you.